Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Como mamá, siempre quiero lo mejor para mi familia. Por eso quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solo huevos Eggland's Best. No importa cómo los cocines, siempre saben frescos y deliciosos. Y tienen más vitaminas D y E y el doble de omega 3 que los huevos regulares. Entonces, ¿por qué conformarte con menos cuando puedes tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Oh, and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton, and with me is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Ryan. It's good to be back. I feel like it's been a couple weeks, but it's always a little bit hard to come back. Just a reality, not necessarily as a pod, but back to work after it was basically two short weeks. You know, we had Veterans Day week, and then we had Thanksgiving week, and now we're coming back to a full week, which is like all of a sudden we're in December now too. So it's like, oh man, like a lot of time's going by. But you know, I will say I'm doing all right, given that I did play pickup basketball during Black Friday with my wife's nephews, or technically my nephews, who are all 19. They have a bunch of high school friends, or just recently graduated high school friends. And I don't think I've ever been called unk more in my life. Like, I know that's a really like Gen Z thing that they're doing, but like every time I pump faked and the shot a bank shot in, they're like, oh, Unk still got it. And I was like, you know what? Like, I deserve that. I'm pulling out the Tim Duncans. Like, you know, it's working out. But yeah, you know, how about you? How was your holiday break?
It was good. A lot of time spent with family. Got stuck in a bit of a snowstorm heading back to into town from South Dakota, where my in-laws live. So that's par for the course up here in the Midwest, obviously. You just want to get home safe, and I ended up missing the Boston home game, which is whatever. I was more frustrated that a 6.5 hour car ride turned into an 8 hour drive than not being able to go to a basketball game at that point.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because on one side you're like going through snowstorms, and on the other side I'm playing basketball at night in like 60 degree weather, like at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, man, it was really cold though that night. So I'm sorry about that, Ryan, but you know, you survived, right? You know, you did your best, and you know, that's part of, I think, that Minnesota experience I've never had. And I think, you know, as a typical spoiled non like coastal city, I'm like, especially on the West Coast, where I'm like, man, like that would be so much fun to live in the snow. But that's because I've never had to deal with that stuff before.
Yeah, we'll get you out here in a couple weeks when it's supposed to get like to negative 20 or whatever. We'll get you a cup of water. You can throw it in the air. It'll freeze before it hits the ground.
The first time, a whole bunch of fun. The first time
I've
ever been to Minnesota, Ryan, was January of 2013. And I chose to go because that was like the only time that I was able to like get a cheap flight out there. For whatever reason, flights are cheap going to Minnesota in January. And I caught three games. This was during Andrew Wiggins, Ricky Rubio, Zach LaVine, Shabazz Muhammad years. Mm-hmm. And I caught three games. The Wolves lost all three of them. And I'll never forget that I went to an ice cream shop. It was somewhere downtown Minneapolis. And it was like, you get a discount percentage off based on what negative degree out it was. So it was, I guess, negative 10. So I got 10% off like my ice cream thing. And again, it's a typical tourist. I was like, oh, that's so cool. So I have been once during the cold, but it's been, you know, over a decade since. So
sounds good. Well, the cliche around in the Midwest is while the temperatures drop outside, the action heats up inside.
Hell yeah.
inside Target Center. And the Wolves, they've had an interesting week. You and I didn't podcast last week due to just Thanksgiving stuff. But since we've done a pod, it's been a roller coaster. I think we did a pod after the Dallas win. And then they obviously take care of business against Washington. But after that, they lose to Phoenix in just disastrous fashion, blowing an 8-point lead with less than a minute left. Pretty much a similar story up 10 with 3 minutes left against Sacramento, lose that one in overtime. Hard fought loss against Oklahoma City, but ultimately they were tied late in the game and really kind of let it go down the stretch.
I must correct you. They were up one for 12 seconds in the fourth quarter, Ryan. They were up one with, I think, like 9 minutes left in the game for literally one possession. But that was it, yeah.
Yeah, it was. it wasn't a collapse, but the late game play wasn't great. And they come home for a pair of games back-to-back in Boston and San Antonio. They win them both. Both games had positive late-game stuff. The Boston game had another 12-0 run that Boston tied the game late, but ultimately you get the win. Yeah, Leo, your thoughts on just kind of the roller coaster the Wolves have been on before we start diving into the specific games?
Oh, man. Yeah, it feels like it was just yesterday that the Wolves were blowing these huge fourth quarter leads. And I remember during the Phoenix collapse, I was at a wedding and I was part of a wedding. And I remember I was like, hey, guys, I'll be right back. It was like 3 minutes left in the game. I was like, I got to go use the restroom. I actually ran out to my car to go stream out my phone because I was like, all right, let me see the end of this. And the Wolves were pulling ahead. And I literally was on my phone, like dual screening the game, streaming it, and then preparing blue sky skeets. I was gonna get out there like, oh yeah, like the Wolves finally beat an over 500 team and blah, blah, blah. But then as the game was going along, like, you know, we all know what happened. I went back to the wedding and my wife knew exactly where I was. She's like, I'm sorry. And I was like, you know what, man, like, just give me a drink. I don't want to think about this game. And then again, similar to Sacramento, you know, my Sacramento Kings, as you say, mm-hmm. You know, we all know how that game went. I remember as I was watching it unfold, my wife saw me just kind of like stewing in anger as it was going on because I was getting texts from my oldest brother, from some friends, like, oh my God, are you guys are about to blow this lead? And I was like, oh, I'm never going to hear like the end of this. And so, yeah, I was super pissed off that game. And then, of course, against the Boston game most recently, this was on Saturday, right? It was, I was at a park. It was, and it was like with their family. It was a nice night out, evening out for us at that time. And I remember telling her, I was like, all right, we're up 12 with about 4 minutes left. Like, this is how we lost the last two games, babe. And she like didn't care what I was talking about. She's like, but there's no way you guys are going to blow it again, right? And then next thing you know, they tie the game. And I'm like cursing at my phone. I was like, I told you like this is going to happen. And obviously, luckily, we squeezed that one out. So yeah, it's, you know, I went through a roller coaster. I'm not going to lie, in the last two games. I think when Anthony Edwards turned it over, I think once or twice, or at least once in the fourth quarter, even though we were still up 12, I was like, oh my God, it's happening. Like, I'm just super triggered by it. So I can only imagine how everyone else feels about it. But yeah, ultimately, it was really great turnaround that they squeezed out those two games, both against winning teams, which is, you know, what we haven't seen yet. And hopefully it's the start of something. I mean, we'll get into later about some of the lineups and, you know, how they've been adjusting in the second half. But there are positives to it. And I think we should also celebrate that, just like we are losing our shit over how they collapse as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting. They sit at 12-8, which is a little bit more in the 49 win pace, which is exactly where their Vegas over under sat. Before the season. So at least from like a Nationals perspective, the Wolves are kind of exactly what you'd expect them to be. I know, like, obviously people will point to, well, they played an easy schedule. They probably should be better than 12-8. That's true. But there's only four teams that have an easier schedule the rest of the way in the Western Conference than they do. Like, I've been harping on this, but like the schedule doesn't really get harder. This is kind of what it is. it's what it's going to be. You're going to have stretches of terrible teams followed up by a handful of good teams. And then it's kind of, it's a weird year in the Western Conference. It's certainly not as, it's not as deep as I think many of us thought it would be, but obviously the teams at the top are just as good as we thought. But the first topic I want to dive into, was just the Spurs game right off the top. I kind of thought it was their best win of the season. Like you mentioned, it was their second game against a team above 500, the first one being the Boston game the night before. But I just think it's like their first game against a team that was really rolling coming into the game. The Spurs had won 5 of 6. All of those without, well, they might have, that was just since Wemby got hurt. They had won 5 of 6. They were playing really good basketball. They had beaten Denver right before Thanksgiving. Like, or right after Thanksgiving, they were rolling. They're playing as good as they have all year. And the Wolves took it to them in the fourth quarter. So do you agree with me that the Spurs game was their best win of the year?
I think the game was impressive for sure. I do think, just given the scope of the narratives about the fact that they've been collapsing the fourth quarter, even that win against Boston, and obviously, you know, the last couple of games before that, when you take that narrative into it, I can see where you're coming from, and, you know, somewhat agree with you. That was the best win of the season because they really kind of put that, you know, boogeyman to bed for now in terms of the fourth quarter woes. And so I think quality team who were playing well, and then they were facing adversity the whole game. I mean, essentially they were down big, you know, in the third quarter, and it kind of seemed like, all right, well, you know, how are they going to dig out of this? And in my head, secretly, I was thinking, okay, well, the Wolves can't blow this game up double digits if they're never ahead by double digits. And so even in the fourth quarter, Wolves are kind of getting ahead. I was like, all right, just keep it to 9. Like, don't go to 10. Don't go to 12. Like, that's like the death knell right there. But obviously, they sped ahead. So I do think it was good. With the Spurs, though, I will say, they give me a little bit of OKC vibes in terms of how much talent that they have. I mean, you have guys coming off the bench. They're still really productive for them, despite that they're missing, you know, potentially two of their best players. In, you know, Stephon Castle is probably the third best player, and Wembanyama. I mean, you had guys like, I mean, how many games has Dylan Harper played now? I think less than 10, probably, or around 10 games, maybe. And he was amazing out there. I mean, he was scoring on Rudy. He was super impressive, composed. I mean, that's what we saw a lot from him before he went down with injury. And then they even have guys like Keldon Johnson. He's a classic, like, Wolves killer. And one of my Wolves group chats I texted before the game, I was like, I feel like Keldon Johnson's going to go off. And he was going off against us. So they're really deep. Obviously, they're also starting guys like, you know, Luke Kornet and Julian Champagny, and they have Kelly Olynyk coming off the bench. So not as deep as OKC, but they're young, and you could see them kind of going in that path. So yeah, good win. I will say, in my opinion, I still think the best win of the season was the season opener against Portland. Those of you who maybe forgot it or didn't get to see it, you know, Portland, they right now they've lost 7 of their last 9. They've kind of been free falling down the standings. But at one point, you know, they were a potential threat in the West. And, you know, I think in that game, in my notes that I wrote down, Portland was up 8 points with 9 minutes left. And they had led the majority of the game. It was a close game. It was like one or two possession game all game. And then they stretched it out to 8 points. And at that point, the ESPN win probability had them all the way up to 61.7% chance of winning, which doesn't seem like a lot. That was with only a minute 42 left in the game. Minnesota gave up a 1-point lead. Tumani Kamara hit 2 free throws to go back in the lead. Julius Randle pulled up for 3, missed. Jrue Holiday gets a long rebound. He goes the other way. He's wide open for 3, and he hits that 3, and all of a sudden the Wolves are down 2 possessions, and he just barely rims out. And then, you know, Ant kind of closes it out. So I still think, you know, given the context of a single game, I think Portland was probably the hardest, you know, the best victory that they had. But, you know, the rest was, you know, Ant's history. So I think, you know, this game definitely is up there as well, too, especially given how bad Portland is playing now. You kind of think of San Antonio a little bit higher.
Yeah, and it's important to pull out, like you did, Castle and Wemby out for San Antonio. That's possibly, what, like 2 of their 3 best players?
Right,
is Castle their 3rd best player behind Wemby and Fox? Something like that. So, like, they were shorthanded, and the Wolves can say they're on the back-to-back. But, it's less about, like, who, for me, who was, like how good the team was, is how good they're playing at the time. And the Spurs had been playing great. And for much of that game, the Wolves... what impressed me about San Antonio was just the amount of guards, quick guards they have that just drive right at you, get into the paint. They were doing that the first 3 quarters of the game, just getting right to the basket. I think I wrote it down in my article. The Spurs had like 50-something points in the paint through the first 3 quarters of the game and only had 6 in the fourth quarter. Like, that was pretty much why the Wolves won, is they were able to shut that off. I asked Dante about it after the game, among other questions, about just... They were in that zone right at the beginning of the fourth quarter that's clearly, like, changed things up. And then Dante was kind of talking about just, like, having better attention to detail and getting a body into guys so that they can't just drive right at you. If they do, they got to go through you, and that slows them down, and guys can rotate behind them. So I just thought the fourth quarter was probably the single best quarter they've played the entire year. The ball movement was awesome. It was an impressive quarter, and it was a pair of games that really, if they had, ignoring the outcomes of the Phoenix and Sacramento game, if they had dropped either of these two games, certainly just looking at, like, the Spurs are going to be good. The Spurs are going to finish in the top 6. I'm fairly confident. I would imagine the top 6 in the Western Conference right now are going to be the 6 teams that finish as the top 6.
Yep.
I would probably doubt that Phoenix and Golden State kind of catch the Wolves or any of the team. And the Spurs are going to be, I think before the season, I probably would have been slightly hesitant to think the Spurs had a chance to get into that top 4 seed range. I would say, I mean, assuming Wemby can, like, play a solid amount of games, 50, 60 games, which unfortunately is not an assumption you can necessarily make, but I think they can win 50 games. I don't think that's necessarily out of the range of possibility. So to get a win against that team, even if they are missing guys, I think is important. If they had, well, said drop this game, especially if like Spurs are healthy on the second night of back-to-back, you probably wouldn't blink. But after blowing those two games, I think it's just good to get back on track and not to like talk about the schedule too much, but like it opens up again. You're looking at like seven straight games where the Wolves are going to probably feel pretty good about their chances to win going in. So it sets up well. The collapses late are really bad and concerning, and we'll talk about that type of stuff. But ultimately, which they've done this pretty much this entire Wolves era, even going back to the pre-Rudy team with Pat Bev and all, like whenever you think you can count them out, the first Rudy year was like incredible how poorly they played in stretches and how they were able to turn it around relatively quickly. But even really every season, I don't think like this team has been able to not fully crash out in the last 4 years. I mean, that's why they've made playoff runs recently. It's why they've made the playoffs four straight years.
Yeah, I think I agree with you with that. So, what was it, even last season? It was around this time where it's like Ant's kind of getting a little grumpy with the media in the locker room, and Julius firing the ball to Rudy out of anger, allegedly, mm-hmm. That type of stuff. And I think that's where a lot of people joke and laugh at the continuity. What happened to your continuity? But I think continuity is more than just what happens on the basketball court. It's about what happens off the court in the locker room. And I think that's where we're seeing that, is where it's like, okay, yeah, they obviously had a really rough week before, this weekend. And, they didn't splinter. Like you said, they stuck to it together. They had to address the things together. They didn't have to argue about, what's the hierarchy? What are we supposed to, who's supposed to do what? Like, yeah, you can shake that stuff out, but they didn't have like a Patrick Beverly theme like shouting match in the locker room with one another. They had Mike Conley had a nice dinner with everyone, like heading into the mm-hmm. OKC game. It's like that's that continuity that you see a little bit more coming through, that's paying dividends. And so you can't measure that, and I know that's all kind of subjective because we don't get to see everything that happens in the locker room or behind closed doors, but I do think that matters a lot, and it makes me optimistic where it's at. We're not gonna just like quick twitch like, all right, let's just fire Finch or let's make a huge trade or something like that. We're saying, no, this team is like willing to sit down and figure it out. And I think that's definitely a reason for optimism.
Yeah, exactly. And it really just shows like the line between continuity and stagnation is thin. Right. And we've seen kind of both ends of it. I don't think like just completely tearing up the team for the sake of doing it is the right way. There is a value to continuity, but there's also a value of realizing like if we get down the line of the season, like, oh, we're not good enough with this roster. Like, I don't know. There's a balance there that I think I'm still willing to try to find. And I'm certainly not there was after the 3-game losing streak, obviously it's just a lot of consternation with Wolves fans. And I'm more like just, let's see what it is. Let's see what it plays out. Basically trades can't be made for another 2 weeks anyway, because half the league is not trade eligible until a certain amount of time. It's like in mid-December. And even then, I don't think you'll see really many trades until the deadline. So I just want to, I know like 20 games feels like a lot of sample size, but in some ways it's really not. For some aspects of stats, it's enough, and for others, it's not. And you probably want more like 30, 40 games. So I'm more willing to wait. But the next topic I wanted to talk about, just late game execution, I think is a really interesting talking point right now, because I thought in this last 5-game stretch, we've seen both ends of it. We've seen the really, 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 really bad, and we've seen the good. And I did want to kind of go back to the bad first, which I don't know if we want to talk about the Phoenix kind of disaster. I basically wrote right after that game, because I was just so frustrated by it, that like Ant, Julius, and Finch just needed to be better. And it was specifically, I think, on Ant. He missed a box out late in that game, had a terrible turnover, missed the free throws. I thought it was especially on him. The Sacramento loss, I thought it was not, it was on him as much as anyone else, but really just on the whole team. And then one play late in the Oklahoma City game kind of stood out. It's tied at 101 with 303 left. And the Thunder forced the ball out of Ant's hand into Dante's hand, and he gets stripped by SGA, and they make a layup, and OKC goes up two, and they never give up the lead after that. And that's just one of those plays, especially relating to the lack of point guard, where like that type of turnover just can't happen. Late in the game, you need every single possession. The game's tied, and you can't have Dante dribbling up the ball and getting stripped. And yep. Basically what happened on that play is where they were trying to get the ball to Ant, and OKC stopped the inbound and forced it to someone else, which happened to be Dante. And there wasn't the focus to get Ant the ball back once they crossed half court quick enough. And the good defensive team, like Dante, stripped it. Like that's the type of, along with the Phoenix collapse, like there just has to be an extra attention to detail. And I will praise Ant, or at least I will, later in this podcast, but that's just the little things that he still needs to continue to do. Make sure, like, all the little things, can't be turning the ball over, got to box out on important rebounds, go get the ball when it's supposed to be your ball on a possession. All that sort of stuff just kind of happened. So before we move on to kind of some of the good late game stuff of the past two games, what did you have thoughts on just the collapses?
Yeah, I think the whole team, if they haven't already done so, you need to watch a lot more just like YouTube highlights of track comebacks, where like you see these guys are, especially like you're talking to like 1600, probably more than that. Let's say like the 3200, like 2 mile or more races, where it's like you have these guys who look like they're going to just coast the victory. They're up like a whole half of a lap. And then the other guys, whoever's in second place, just comes cruising through and just barely snatch it from them at the end. It's like, that's what's happening a lot. A lot of these mental errors and laps are, I think it was on Dane's pod where they were saying that sometimes the Wolves just act like they're too cool for school kind of thing, right? Where it's just like, oh yeah, it's fine. Like, who cares about this inbound? Like, we're already up. Like, we're still up two possessions with a minute left. Like, it's fine. Or like, all right, well, let me just throw this kind of lazy pass, or let me just kind of wait it out. And they're not setting screens with purpose. They're not cutting with purpose. And I think a lot of that is a lack of focus. And you know, how do you address that? I mean, it's a lot of it is an effort thing. A lot of it is, you know, maybe coming from the coaching staff, where it's like you have to instill that sense of urgency in them. You know, we see so many of these like inbounds violations. I mean, those are straight. I see people on social media or on, you know, wherever, a comment sections that are saying like the Wolves just don't understand how to inbound a ball. Like Julius Randle doesn't know how to inbound a ball. Where it's like, okay, yeah, maybe he's not the main guy I want inbounding the ball, but he knows how to inbound a basketball. It's just a lackadaisical approach to it, where he's just kind of like, all right, whatever. Like, they scored a tough basket off one of our turnovers. Let me just kind of whatever, throw this ball in. So yeah, I think a lot of it is a mindset of it. And that's why I think these last two games are so important, that they can kind of do a mental reset to be like, okay, like now that we're up, yeah, Boston maybe wasn't a great example, but they did still finish it out, however bad maybe that process was. But that they can do it, that they can lock in a focus, especially that Spurs game. So yeah, I think coaching staff's got to do a lot, and the players themselves also have to take accountability for it. So, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward. I think the best case scenario is like, all right, well then, you know, when you're up 10, just remember the losses that you had, or up 12 and the loss you had, or up 8 and the losses that you had, and turn that into like 15. Turn that into 20, turn that into 25, go up by that much. Then you can cruise like, at the end, because obviously a 10 to 12 point margin is not enough with, you know, 3 to 4 minutes left in the game.
Yeah. And the biggest thing late in the games to me is like the turnovers. That's like the stuff that really can't happen, because I mean, it's one thing if like your offense is just like stagnant, that's not good, obviously, but like the Wolves have the quality of players to score, even if they're stagnation, right? Like, obviously, the ball movement is what you really want to see in like the fourth quarter against San Antonio shows that. But what was the dagger against Boston? A broken play where Ant just kind of throws it in. But it's like the sloppy turnovers, like, just need, if they had just missed shots against Phoenix down the stretch, they win. If they had missed shots against Sacramento, they win. It's like the turnovers are the big deal. Late against Oklahoma City, that was probably more just a hard-fought loss, and like I said, the turnover there with
the missed free throws. Yeah.
The missed free throws from Rudy, which are going to happen more than, obviously, other players. But the Dante turnover, 3 minutes left, I just think, like, your margin of error is already so slim against Oklahoma City. You just can't have that. But the Boston game, I think, was really instructive to me. in the sense of, obviously, so they go up by 12 and they give up the 12-0 run. There's a turnover or two in there as well. And it's tied. And obviously, like, I think we're all watching it. It's like, oh my gosh, they're really going to do this again. Like, for the basically third game in four nights with a fourth straight loss. And instead, they run, just Finch calls timeout, and they run a perfect play, Ant and Randall pick and roll, where they hit Randall on the short roll, and he finds Mike wide open in the corner for three. And they go up three there. They get a stop. Obviously, Ant chucks in a prayer, but they were basically, after that Mike three, they were in control of the game the rest of the way. And I think that's the area where, to me, is most encouraging, is obviously the late game collapses are frustrating, but like against Sacramento, they had a very similar collapse, but instead of responding to that, giving up a run late, they just melted down even further. And against Boston, at least, I think they figured out some of the subsequent, like, they hit adversity and they overcame it. And I think that's like important. That, I mean, every team's going to give up runs. Obviously, the runs the Wolves are giving up are just like even beyond that. But the fact that they were able to come back and win that game, I do think is instructive that they can do it, at least for one night.
Yeah, it is a thing where you can count probably on two hands, you know, in these collapses, how many times these Wolves possessions on offense, they don't even touch the paint at all. They barely even break the 3-point line on these. Like, they're standing outside. People aren't cutting. They're like, all right, well, you know, Ant's good enough. He'll just take a step back three. And it's like, those are the plays that he has to know. I mean, he, even in the Boston game, he kind of stopped driving until, you know, Finch drew up that play with him and Randall to get that Conley three. So, you know, it's really promising to see that, you know, Ant being able to kind of learn how to adapt, because again, you can't simulate these moments. Like, you can't simulate this in practice. Like, all right, man, you guys are just down, just gave up a 12-0 run, and you got to go score a bucket now. It's like, it's not going to be the same as if you're actually getting those game reps. So I know that sounds like a little bit of lip service and just kind of like coping, a little bit of copium, where it's like, all right, well, it's good that we lost those games, we learned from them. But at the end of the day, it is a learning lesson for them, and better now than later. You know, we have to see the progress, which we did see this weekend, and hopefully it continues to go up that way and they learn, so that this way they don't have their late game collapses at the end of the season when they're playing potentially, you know, play-in or playoff games later on, because it's going to be even tighter. They're not going to be able to build 10-12 point leads as easily in the postseason. So
yeah, and I think the San Antonio game for the clutch time stats is probably the most informative, because they just avoided it altogether. I think that's something that they did so seldom last year, was just like, okay, we have a 10-point lead, just make it 12, and the last 5 minutes just won't even matter. And that's what they did against San Antonio. They were trailing coming into the fourth quarter. They went on a big run. They go up by as many as 14 points. And like, the run San Antonio put together after that, like, just cut it to 8, and then the Wolves would just find more offense and push it back up, and by the time it was 3 minutes left, the game was basically over. Like, that's what, like, good teams do, is that they don't even let clutch time even become a factor, because in the NBA, where a lot of teams have these, even the bad teams have, like, guys that can put the ball in the basket, if you give them a chance to come back, a lot of times they will, even if you're a good team, like, guys will hit tough shots. So I think, like, that's the biggest thing, is like, I think in general, clutch time efficiency is probably not as indicative of who the team is. It's certainly not as like season long numbers or whatever, but if you can just avoid clutch time altogether, you take out the variance. Like, you don't even need to screw around with like the Sacramento game where like Monk's hitting tough shots. You don't even give them a chance to breathe.
Yeah, I still want to continue to see more ball movement and attacking closeouts. They obviously did a good job of that in the Spurs win, you know, as we're kind of transitioning into the good of it. And I think that was Finch's vision when he had that lineup he talked about in the postgame presser, about he had Conley, Dante, Jaden, Julius, and Nas. And obviously it's easier to run that lineup out there when the opposing centers are Luke Kornet and Kelly Olynyk versus, like, you know, a more serious starting five. But again, that's the vision, is to get the cutting, get the ball moving, so it's not just stuck in one spot. And, you know, that's how Julius dished out, I think it was like 6 or 7 assists in that fourth quarter. I want to continue to see them do that. I think in the last three games, so we talk about, you know, last week, OKC and then Boston and then obviously against San Antonio, the offensive rating in the last three games jumped from the first half is 110, which is 20th best in the last three games, to 131, which is third in the league in the second half. So it's a pretty big jump. And I think that, again, we talked about this in the beginning, and Ryan and I continue to have this, you know, respectful war about like who's going to have the better, you know, offensive or defensive rating at the end of the year, where it's like this team has to understand, like, we saw Rudy getting cooked, you know, to be honest, by Dylan Harper, by De'Aaron Fox, like, and that's not going to happen all the time, but, you know, it was happening. And so Vince made the move, like, all right, if they're going to play small and play fast, we're going to have to match that with that as well, too. And again, maybe that's not the best lineup to run out every night, but it worked that night. And obviously, you know, the defense is going to be great, but the offense is what really kept it, like you said, from getting into clutch time, that they were able to have that connectivity and produce. So this way that they don't have to worry about getting a stop every single time, because you know that going the other way, like, I don't want to say trade twos for threes, but that was kind of what was happening. You know, they were, Devin Vassell is going to get in the lane, turn into prime Chris Paul, you know, and just hit every mid-range jumper. But then the Wolves are coming the other way, moving the ball side to side, east-west, getting paint touches and spraying it out and rotating the ball to open corner shooter. And that's what really broke the game open. So I really like to see that. I do think that was very encouraging, and hopefully they can continue to build off of that and not just think that, okay, well, your shots are going to fall every time, that's why you win. It's like, no, you use good process and good decision-making every time, you'll more than likely win.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. They did end up sitting Rudy down the stretch of the game. Obviously, they brought him in late for defense, but like for the start of the fourth quarter where he'd likely be in the game, he was not, and they didn't really bring him back in because the team was rolling. And I think you mentioned Finch just bringing up the question was asked just like what went into that decision. And he basically like he almost just gestured toward the box score, right? Like, well, we were rolling. We didn't need, I think it's important, like, not every time Rudy sits has to be like a referendum on everything Rudy wise. I think the Wolves have a lot of good lineups, even without Rudy, that can be successful, especially on the offensive end, especially against a team where you can kind of try to hide your defensive deficiencies when Rudy's not out there. The Wolves have three quality bigs on this team, and they can, like, they have different combinations, and one of those combinations is Rudy on the bench. Lineups that you'd mentioned that has been successful is like the one big lineup with just Nas, just Randall, and like Jaden at the four, basically as your rim protector. Those have been good minutes, especially offensively. And Finch just kind of said, like, Rudy's an adult. Like, everyone knows, basically, he didn't say this, but like, I think there's only three guys on this team that will close every single night, which I think is Jaden, Julius, and Ant. I think those guys will be on the court, and basically it's like which guard is in there, Mike or Dante, and which big is in there, Nas or Rudy. And obviously you can bring in Jalen Clark for certain possessions. You can bring it, like, it's not exact, but like the last 5 minutes of the game, I think is going to be those are basically the seven guys that played big roles last year. Those are going to, so I think, and Nas did say this in the locker room, like, some nights he won't be out there, some nights Rudy will. Like, I think they're all settled into their role, and both, like, media reaction-wise and just them in the locker room-wise, I don't think it has to be, like, oh, like, the first year was, like, anytime they do this, they'd sit Rudy, it'd be, like, a whole referendum on the trade, and even last year, it just turned into this whole big thing, and it doesn't have to be that anymore, because I think they made the right decision. They were, generally, if you're going to take Rudy off the court, you're not going to be able to defend. Well, the fourth quarter was their best defensive quarter, and I think they were able to do that in spite of defensively, they were able to do that in spite of Rudy off the court, not because Rudy was off the court, is what I would say. But anytime you don't have Rudy off, it makes the offense and ball movement easier, and especially when you can just play five out, you can have either Ant driving the lane, Randall posting up, drawing two defenders. It's better. And I just think that, like, that variability and not being able to sit down your defensive player, your big man, when the game dictates it, I think is really important.
Yeah, I agree. Every game, every team and every game is so different. And you can't always say, all right, we're super rigid that we're only going to play these guys for these many minutes, because again, game flow is different and game plans are different. I mean, classic case of like, I mean, you look at round one of the playoffs last year, Rudy couldn't do anything. It seemed like he was not even on the floor for the most part in the first four games against the Lakers. And you look at game five when they closed him out. I mean, Rudy was the best player on the court on both sides. And so, you know, there's going to be games where he's going to sit and games where he plays. And so I think that's part of the beauty of Finch. Again, people laugh about he doesn't have a structured offense. He's just kind of free flowing and like, you know, everyone's kind of doing whatever. Where it's like, no, well, it's because there's a lot of flexibility in it. Because if you just kind of round peg into round hole, square peg into every square hole type of situation, like there's not going to be fluidity. And so when a player's in foul trouble or a player's not available for injury or the game plan is to lock up and take away one of those square pegs, like you have different shape pegs that can go into different shape holes. I think that's kind of where the whole NBA is leaning towards as well, too, is being to have multiple guys who can do multiple things and being able to play in different ways as well, too. So, yeah, I think it was cool to see that, you know, the Wolves finish out and play good defense against a solid team who, yes, are missing guys, but are still, as you mentioned in the beginning, winning a lot of quality games. I mean, they had just beaten the Nuggets recently as well, too, with that same lineup. So it's a good team, and they played well, and Finch pulled the right levers, and you have to kind of give him you know, his flowers for as much as he screwed up, or you can put the onus on him for those collapses. You know, he did good, you know, for the last two games, especially against the Spurs.
Yep, and the defensive, it's been weird that, like, the defensive intensity, or I mean, defensive success has come in the second half, so both the Boston and San Antonio game, and really just the fourth quarter for the San Antonio game. I'm not exactly sure why that's happening, why maybe it's just a two-game stretch where it just happened to be that way. I do think that, like, the coaching staff, because they have a lot of defensive talent, if the coaching staff can, and Dante mentioned this, like, they bring them good, solid tips or matchup stuff that they can attack defensively, and not getting too specific with it, just being like broad of here's what we're trying to do, here's what we're trying to prevent. He did mention, like, and this was like the whole San Antonio game, where it's like you want to get stops, and stops are obviously what you're searching for, but you can get away with giving up fewer stops if you're running them off the line. They're not like they're making tough twos instead of open threes. Right. Like, you can live with that. Like, I mean, obviously everyone knows the math. If they're shooting nothing but twos and they're making 40% of them, you're doing great yep. on defense. Well, if you're getting stops on 60% of 3-point attempts, well, that's bad. Like, that's the difference at 1.2 points per shot and 0.8, which is drastically different. So obviously they were trying to get stops, but I thought they did a good job. Like, San Antonio wasn't hitting many of their, but like they didn't, the Wolves just bombarded them with a 3-point differential. And I don't know if they can find a gear where it's like both the first half and the second half kind of you can find the defense, because both the first halves of Boston and San Antonio, they were just getting way too many points in the paint, whether Rudy was there or not. So but especially with like the zone has been a nice wrinkle, I think, that they've thrown out there. It's obviously not something that you can run from minute one of the game, but especially like when the opponent calls timeout, they put together an ATO to get a certain player a bucket, and you just totally switch the defensive scheme on them, even if it's for one possession. I think it's like a nice change of pace you can throw at a team.
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point. So when you talk about the first half versus second half defense, I went to go pull some of the numbers, just basic defensive rating numbers from the NBA.com. I'm a little bit more concerned about the lack of defense in the first half versus the second half, where their defense is so bad in the first half that looks so much better in the second half. Because when I pulled the numbers, so on the season, Ryan, in the first half, their defensive rating is 112.3, which is 10th best in the league. So not bad. In the second half, it's 113.4, so not much of a difference. Still 10th best in the league. Now, in the last three games, so we're talking OKC, Boston, and San Antonio, their defensive rating in the first half was 125, which is 28th best in the league, which is really, really bad. And then the second half, it jumps up to 108.8, which is 10th. Which is right out where they're supposed to be. So I think the one that jumps out to me is like, what's happening in that first half of these last three games? Now, obviously, when you're playing someone like OKC, that could throw off the data. And, you know, everything changes depending on the matchup and who's available. But, yeah, I definitely think that there has to be a sense of, you know, maybe it's the back-to-backs, you know, that, you know, happened to San Antonio, why they didn't play as good defense in the first half against them. But, yeah, there is something to be noted about the adjustments that they are making, that they are locking in. Now, I didn't go through and pull the data because I was afraid to see what I was going to find, what the defensive rating was in clutch time in the past couple games, because that obviously is going to be pretty bad. But yeah, you know, I do think that there is still a lot of meat on that bone to increase. And Ryan, I have good news for you today. I pulled up the defensive ratings and offensive ratings of all the teams throughout the season up until now. So we're about 20 games this season for the Wolves. The Wolves are currently eighth in offensive rating, well, barring whatever happened today. So I pulled the data this morning. And their defensive rating is 10th. So they're actually one of four teams that are top 10 in both right now. It's them, one of five teams, I think. So it's OKC and Denver and us in the West Coast. And on the East Coast, I think it's Orlando and Detroit. I think those are the only teams, including us, that have top 10 in both. So, you know, with all that said, our records, okay, we're only 12-8, or we've only beaten two over 500 teams, or we had a soft schedule. Like, the numbers don't look that bad when it comes to when it really comes down to it. Now, you know, hopefully they get better than just 8th and 10th overall. But yeah, I think right now there's room for optimism, despite the fact that, you know, maybe the record isn't great so far.
Yeah, I think you mentioned if the first half and second half defense on the season isn't much different, I think I'm willing to just it's just a weird quirk of the past two games, not necessarily something that, at least in the data, jumps out. And like you mentioned, the Wolves, and this happened last year, the Wolves' underlying numbers are great. They are one of the best teams in the Western Conference right now. And obviously Golden State, Denver, and Houston are so far, although Houston just lost to Utah tonight.
They did.
And Denver got whooped up on by a pretty bad Mavericks team at home. The Wolves' underlying numbers put them, like, they're as good as anyone in the West. And really, they probably should be winning more games than, like, the Lakers and the Spurs. If they can just kind of get out of their own way, which has often been a problem, but ultimately was just a pair of bad losses on the road. So you like to see them come home and right that wrong. But let's move on to our Apex Alpha segment, our leaders of the pack this week. Leo, who you got?
I am going with our man who has finally returned, Mr. TJ Shannon. Terrence Shannon Jr., welcome back to Resistance, baby. We've missed you. He's barely played, you know, so far in the season. He's missed 9 games, which is, you know, almost half the season so far for the Wolves. And in his return game against Sacramento, he really just played a couple minutes, so really doesn't, I don't really look at that. But he really went off against the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Boston Celtics in those games. And you talk about the last three, so we're talking the last week. So OKC, Boston, and San Antonio. TJ is averaging about 14 points off 71% shooting, including 2.5 threes. And I think that's really big, the 2.5 threes, because his value is going to be, he has to be able to space the floor and be sharing it with Ant and Julius. And, you know, though he didn't hit a single field goal against the San Antonio Spurs two nights ago, or when you're listening to this two nights ago, he still had a strong showing. I think he came in, he played 12 minutes. He didn't play a whole lot, but he still drew 4 personal fouls. And one of those is a charge. And then 3 of those are shooting fouls. And 2 of those shooting fouls, 4 free throws that he made in the third quarter, was big and kind of biding time for the Wolves to get to that fourth quarter without being down double digits. And so I still think he had overall good showing against San Antonio, even though he wasn't, you know, making any shots. He didn't take that many. I'm also tempted to throw Minnesota's own Chet Holmgren into our Prey of the Week later on, because TJ just yammed one on him on Wednesday as well, too. It was like in a fast break, and Chet definitely got caught in that one as well, too. So it was really good to see him out there hitting threes, dunking, you know, trying to make effort on the defensive end, drawing fouls. Again, that's the TJ that we knew from last season in Summer League and in Vegas, and then even preseason, and we're getting him back now. So my apex is TJ Shannon.
Something about OKC that just draws out the best in Terrence Shannon Jr., almost like probably like most of his best games have come against Oklahoma City. So yeah, it's been good. I think they talked about, Finch did at practice, just that his injury was bothering him a good amount early in the season before he hit the injured list. So I think we can hopefully plan on what Shannon's been the last couple of games, I think is hopefully what we'll see from him the rest of the season. And I think the Wolves have shown that they need another player. That obviously, you like the top 7 is solid, but they're going to need guys like Shannon and Clark, I think both of them, to really step into at least some sort of roles, because the Wolves aren't going to be healthy all year. Obviously, other than Ant missing a string of games, the Wolves have been incredibly healthy to start the year, and obviously that you plan for that to and hope for that to continue. Other than the inevitable guy misses one game here or there, that just you're never going to be able to avoid, but you hope that's all you get. But you're going to need guys like that to step up. I think Dillingham has had better games. It's certainly the Washington game a couple weeks ago was just, I think, like just the
rock bottom
for his rock bottom in terms of his confidence. And I think at least that's turned around. Probably still not seeing like the underneath the hood value numbers probably don't speak well of him still, but I think he's at least been knocking down some shots, which is encouraging. And if Mike has to miss a game or two, you might lean on him a little bit more. He's obviously a guy that you'd look to push the pace along with Shannon. So yeah, it's been good to see Shannon get going. But my Apex Alpha, I'm not going to make it too complicated. Anthony Edwards has just been sensational the past five games, especially if you ignore the stretch of some of these games. But he's had five straight 30-point games, 40-point games in the two collapse games. But over the last five games, 37.2 points, 4.8 assists on 56% from the field and 49% from three. Just absurd scoring numbers. And the other than the game against San Antonio where he had a bunch of turnovers right in a row, the turnovers have been in check for the good part. And last night against San Antonio, I think is a good example of like where he's like growing, where he only had 3 points in that fourth quarter. But I don't think like he didn't play bad. It was a solid, like he was part of the ball movement and everything. They didn't need him you wouldn't have wanted him to like take more of the shots. Obviously there's been points in really any, you could say this about any superstar, but it's like, you want them to like, he should shoot the ball every time. And the Wolves will have stretches for that. But they didn't need him to do it last night. And he fit right into the offense and was their biggest cheerleader when he was on the bench. And then when they needed a bucket to go seal it, he got that and one to get over that 30-point mark, which he passes Cat as the most Timberwolves 30-point games. You obviously hope Ant is in a Timberwolves uniform basically forever, but we're going to start seeing like records for Ant, like especially like cumulative Timberwolves records start to really fall here. And you hope he can chase down like KG's games played and points records, but certainly like even like just simple stuff like if I always like this, like if you go look at like the greatest or the most 3-point shots made in NBA history for any it's like LeBron is in the top 10. It's just games played. Like he's just played so many games, and obviously he's a solid enough 3-point shooter, but like he's getting that volume from just games played. And Ant's getting up there in terms of Timberwolves history where it's like he'll probably finish close to like most assists in Timberwolves history just because he's a guard who's played with the team as much as anyone. Where obviously they need him to continue to be better as in late game execution and stuff like that. But we saw that against Boston and San Antonio where I thought he was solid. And obviously the 3-game losing streak, you need him to be better, but it's hard to be anything but give him anything but praise for this recent stretch, which is like, we knew it was coming. Like I'll sit here and criticize the Phoenix game for him specifically as much as anyone, but I think we all knew like he'll bounce back. And I think especially like the consistency scoring 30 a night, basically every night, I think is maybe the most important part.
Yeah. It's so good to see him do this. And I think we've officially crossed over for those of you who are still waiting and contemplating that, you know, this is the Anthony Edwards that we can come to expect almost every single night. Like it is weird when he's not scoring 30 points now. And I'm not saying that this means he's going to, but it's that this is kind of a thing that we saw Shea kind of over the years become consistent with that. You know, he's always getting his 30 some points every night. And Ant is obviously maybe a bit more explosive than that. You know, he's capable of scoring a lot more because it's 3-point shooting and whatnot. But I think one thing that was really funny for me to kind of see, this was, I want to say a month ago or so, Mark Cuban was on, you know, a podcast and was talking about, you know, Anthony Edwards, how he's violating these free throws by every time he shoots, he steps into the paint. This is something that Mark Cuban has a history of. I remember he criticized Shaq way back in like the, you know, 2000s, early 2000s about how he would step in the free throw and he would make these tapes and send them to the league. And so after the Boston Celtics game, which Ant went 10 of 11, he kind of called out Mark Cuban by name. Or not by name. He actually didn't know his name. He said some rich billionaire guy was talking about my free throws and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, I had to adjust it a little bit and tweak it. And I don't want to say that's a direct correlation for why he's missing two free throws in the clutch against the Suns or anything like that, or against, you know, why they missed so many free throws against the Thunder. But it's funny because after the Celtics game that next morning, Mark Cuban wrote like this, like, three paragraph long response, yeah, about like, it's not about Anthony Edwards, it's about the officials, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's funny that Ant has Mark Cuban kind of just living rent free in his head now about it, just about free throws, or it's like, bro, like, you have some other things to worry about with your now Dallas Mavericks, which you forced Nico Harrison and kind of had a whole, I read an article about how there's a whole coup against Nico Harrison, kind of led by Mark Cuban. So whether or not that's a good decision, Mark Cuban, you kind of worry about your own stuff. But Ant is certainly taking care of business. So he went 10 of 11 against the Celtics. He went 2 of 2 against the Spurs yesterday. And so hopefully those bad free throw days are kind of behind us, especially with Ant. So yeah, I agree with you. There is still some late game decision making that he needs to clean up. But overall, this is a captain that we need to see, and he needs to continue to keep his head down, know that the team can rely on him to score when needed to, and he can attack the basket. He's had some drives, I feel like, have a little bit been glossed over. He's had some really impressive drives. He had one against Carter Bryant, who's a rookie on the Spurs yesterday, where he kind of went around the back and kind of completely lost him, went out for this reverse layup. Super beautiful. He even had one, I think it was against the Celtics, where he just like took the ball, went full court. I think he took like one step inside the free throw line and went flying in. It was in the third quarter. He just kind of laid that thing in where everyone was like, wait, did he really just jump from that far? So him attacking the paint is a super, super good development. He's finishing at the rim way better than he had as in years past. That three-point shooting is stabilizing to where it was last year as well, too, after it feels like it was an eternity ago that we were talking about Ant's struggles from three, when it's like now he's just cashing them in at a crazy rate, like you said. So, yeah, I'd love to see it. Anthony Edwards, for sure, is, I think, you know, that apex that the Wolves need right now.
Absolutely. All right. Moving on to the prey of the week, I'm going to go first here, and I'm going to choose a pick that'll make it tough for you to find something for your graphic other than just throwing the text in of my, but I'm going to go narratives just in general. The Wolves made narratives their prey. Just because I think a lot of the talking points coming into the games this weekend against Boston and San Antonio, they kind of wiped those away a little bit. Everyone talked about the can't win a game against a 500 team. Well, they did that on back-to-back nights, and certainly the late game stuff we've already talked about here. They both set on the Boston game, they set up that narrative on a tee and then kind of put it away by closing it out down the stretch. And obviously San Antonio, we already talked about that game. So just kind of destroying the narratives in terms of what people expect from this Wolves team. Although you probably will probably see another late game collapse at some point, just as their nature, but yeah, it's kind of a sign, like, the season is very long. I mean, the regular season ends is April, and the Wolves are going to hope their season ends in June. Like, got a long way to go, both just season-wild, regular season. We're a quarter of the way, and it feels like we've been through a lot. We're a quarter of the way into this. What we've been through now, we got three more of those to try to figure out what this team is.
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about the narratives of winning as 500 teams, because the Wolves have a full week before they play another team that's over 500, which is the Phoenix Suns, and they get a chance for redemption against them. And so I think it was perfect, because say the Wolves didn't win against the Celtics and the Spurs, or even just only the Spurs, where the Wolves have to wait a long time before they get another 500 team to play. The Suns, as we're recording right now, are currently beating up on the Lakers right now. They're suffering a Dylan Brooks game over there. But yeah, the Wolves have the Pelicans twice and the Clippers next week. So hopefully they continue to, you know, follow the narrative in the sense of beating those 500 teams and then continuing that later on with beating the over 500 teams. So I like that. My prey of the week, Ryan, is I hate to say it, our guy, Luka Garza. As Finch said, I think it was in the video tribute. I was trying to find a video of it, Ryan. I couldn't see it posted anywhere. I don't know how long that tribute was. I know you didn't get a chance to make it to the game against the Celtics, but I think I saw someone post that Chris Finch talked in the montage that Luka Garza was a culture setter, which is, you know, that's cool. You know, I like it, you know, hard worker. But yeah, so, you know, props to Luka. You know, all seriousness, he got the tribute video. But he also got slammed on by Rudy Gobert really hard in the minutes that he played on Saturday. I'm really happy, honestly. And again, I say this with all due respect, respectfully. Luka Garza is getting a career opportunity. He's getting career high in minutes per game. He's averaging tied with the career high in points. But against the Wolves, he was a minus 13 in just 5 minutes. It was a 3-point loss. And I hate to say it, but we've seen that before with Luka Garza. I mean, there will be games against usually garbage teams Will come in and he'll put up a quick, you know, solid 20-10 and beat up against a tanking team. But sometimes against more serious competition, he just kind of shows that he's not quite an NBA level player, starting level center for sure, let alone rotation player against serious teams. So yeah, sorry, Luca, I gotta give you the prey. You got dunked on, you had a bad game, but you know, salute to you as a Minnesota Timberwolves culture setter.
Similar to Garza Minot with Boston, it's kind of been fun to watch him find success and at the very least find minutes. I like, you just kind of want to see these guys get a shot at least. Yeah. If they flame out because they didn't do XYZ, you can live with that. Like, you gave it what you got and it didn't work out, whatever. But like, it's not to say the Wolves didn't give like Minot especially enough leash, but it's good to see. Like, I just remember the last year he got hit on a backdoor cut, gave up a bucket, and basically was never seen again the rest of the season. So it's good to see him get the, because I do think he can be a quality NBA player if a team needed his skill set a little bit more than the Wolves did the past couple of years. And I know a lot of us, especially even just the training camp last year, a lot of people are excited for Minot, and it's kind of unfortunate it didn't work out in Minnesota, but it's good to see at least he's getting some playing time over there on a Boston team that certainly just needs players with all the injuries and trades they made in the offseason.
Yeah, shout out to also, I got a little bit of PTSD. I was watching the G League Iowa Wolves. I did a piece of them on Canada Hoops. If you have a chance to check it out, if you're curious on how they're doing. But they did play the Motor City Crews recently, and I got a jump scare when I saw Wendell Moore Jr. was starting for the Motor City Crews. I was like, this guy. Shout out Wendell Moore. He's starting for a professional basketball team, which is good. So, you know, hopefully he gets a second chance at life, unless he ends up like a Jared Culver, who's currently no longer in the G League after playing there for like 5 or 6 years. So,
and that's just kind of how the life cycle goes with the late round picks, although Wendell Moore was a first round pick, I believe. Like, that's just kind of the trend. And maybe, like, I was watching the Clippers, and I it's kind of cool, like, Chris Dunn is still in the league.
Still,
like, the
a
Wolves
thing.
Traded.
Still a thing.
He didn't really have a great season with the Wolves on the 1 year he was here, and his Chicago years didn't really go all that spectacular. But like, he's been a solid role player, and it's always fun to see guys that were selected highly, theoretically could be like, were selected as franchise players, and end up like that part of their career doesn't flame out, and they find like a way to become like a role player. Obviously, Aaron Gordon with the Nuggets is like the premier example of that. Well, I mean, obviously he was good in Orlando and had success, but like, it was always like, this is not the usage rate you'd want for Aaron Gordon. And now it's like, he's the premier example of that, because he's almost surpassed role player with them and is gone. Right. Now he's like, he's reached like the potential when Orlando drafted him or whatever. So obviously you hope that for like, Minot especially probably has not like a star level potential, but it has the potential to be like a solid NBA role player. I don't know. You just hope he can get there, and obviously, or like, see what Nikhil is doing, averaging 20 points a game with Trey out.
Yeah.
So
shout out Nikhil.
We missed Nikhil, obviously, both on the court, but especially off the court with, he always gave great answers. It was like in these press scrums, like a lot of guys will just, you'll ask a question they don't necessarily care about, and they'll give you just whatever stock answer they got. The number of times he asked Nikhil a question and he'd pause, he would actually like fully think out what he was going to answer. It was always like, oh, wow. It's very Canadian. I'll say that.
If you're ever looking for interview tips, like, you know, for a job, like, look at Nikhil Alexander postgame media availability, because he will think and he will respond to you. You'll ask follow-up questions. You know, love to see it. Yeah. Shout out to Nikhil.
All right, let's move into our two words. Describe the current state of the Wolves. I'm going to go with new opponents. So the Wolves don't make the NBA Cup for the third straight year. And for the third straight year, their lack of advancing is rewarded with easier opponents. It's a weird quirk of the NBA Cup, probably my least favorite aspect of it, where you kind of get rewarded for losing. And why the Phoenix loss is specifically doesn't end up, at least in terms of just regular season, it you basically push on it, because if they win that Phoenix game, and assuming like the OKC result holds, they end up as the wild card team in the NBA Cup standings, and they get where Phoenix is now, and they have to play Oklahoma City, which would be the fifth Oklahoma City matchup of the season, which basically instead of that, they get Golden State and Sacramento are their replacement games. Golden State slightly above 500, and Sacramento is far from that. So you get you get rewarded for losing, basically, but with easier matchups. So it's always a little bit like a consolation prize of not making it. The past two seasons, the Wolves have been 2-0 in their replacement games for a total of 4-0. I'm hoping they win both this Golden State Sacramento so they can be 6-0. Because I bet you I could go through, and I don't know if I want to go through 29 teams. If they're 2-2 both this year and last year in the actual Cup games, and they're 3-1 the year before. So if you add up all those wins and losses, I'm guessing all the Associated Cup games, the Wolves are going to be darn near at the top of like just pure win loss. And certainly if they're 6-0 in like their replacement games, I don't know. The minutia of the scheduling in the Cup has always fascinated me, just because like you kind of get rewarded for not making it.
Yeah. I mean, the Golden State, I mean, they're a team right now that at first you think of, oh man, that's a tough team. You know, they're out for revenge after the playoffs, but the Warriors are really struggling right now. There's a lot of turmoil. Jimmy Butler and Draymond are really cranky about the team's defense and things like that. So they're actually under 500 team, I believe, right now. And in Sacramento, I mean, you bet your ass that the Wolves are licking their chops to try and get their lick back against a team that, you know, they should have beaten earlier. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, if they ended up beating the Phoenix and advancing to the NBA Cup, they would have to play, like you said, the Thunder. And then if they lost that game, they'd have to play the loser of Spurs, Lakers. And at that point, the Spurs might have Wemby back, because that's in a couple weeks, and Wemby's supposed to be out for a couple weeks. And so, you know, it's definitely a thing. So, yeah, I agree with you. New opponents. I'm excited to see how they do against them. You know, I don't know if I'm going to make the drive all the way out to Golden State to see them this time, but I'm glad to see that they're going to be able to play a couple California teams here.
All right, Leo, what do you got? Two words.
My two words: have faith. I understand, and I feel the need, and I also enjoy riding the emotional roller coaster of attaching yourself to every win and, you know, hating every loss. I can't lie. Like I said, the Kings game ruined my day, and my wife got pissed at me for getting my day ruined by it. So it was a whole thing. But this team has proven that they can turn things around, not just this season, but last season. And, you know, we talk about continuity. It's the same thing with being a fan. You have to have that continuity. Like, it's okay to get mad. It's okay to get happy. But, you know, let's not panic. And, you know, I'll fire Finch. You know, he's the reason. Or, you know, let's trade Julius. Like, you know, we trade him when his stock is at his highest. You know, maybe we can get John Morant back. It's like, please, no. Like, you know, have faith. Know that the Wolves can turn it around. And I do think that they are turning it around and will continue to do so and prove to us that this is a team that we need to, you know, give a little bit more, you know, credence and give them a little bit more respect on their ability to, you know, win basketball games and do it at a high level.
Absolutely. And we got 62 more basketball games to watch. That's right. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we'll see. That can be a bad thing sometimes. You'd rather not have another game to watch. But yeah, Wolves got a pair of games in New Orleans, the bottom team in the Western Conference standings. After that, they get home Clippers, which is the team right above them in the standings. So another opportunity to stack wins, basically from now until Christmas, or a little bit before that. The Wolves have a fairly easy schedule again, so they can start to stack wins. So when you face Oklahoma City, that'd be one thing, I guess, going back to my thing, was I think there would be value in just playing Oklahoma City as many times as you can possibly get, which is, I would probably argue, is probably more important than actual individual win-loss standings, because I think the Wolves have proven they can win playoff series even as a six seed. So you miss out on another Oklahoma City matchup, at least until mid-December when the OKC comes to Target Center. But yeah, should be a fun month of basketball. Wolves don't have a back-to-back in December. That's always nice. You kind of get more of the pure team out there. So yeah, for Leo, I'm Ryan. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back. I'll be back later this week. Leo and I will be back early next week.
Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!